Welcome to It Does Not Define Me, Breast Cancer Warriors on Freedom 106.5, as we honor Cancer Awareness Month 2023. Now, it is important to highlight breast cancer, but not only to raise awareness, because as you may know, it is the most common type of cancer affecting women in Trinidad and Tobago. But it's also important to share the journey of some of the warriors who have endured the trials and tribulations that many of us only read about. Well, today we're hearing the stories from the survivors, the warriors, the women who have walked this path and are now hoping that their story will inspire you and your daughter to make changes, or also to ensure that you know it is not a death sentence, but it's also something that you can beat. Joining us at this time, Amelia McPhee. She's a breast cancer survivor who has graciously agreed to share her story. At 45, she is blessed.
Yes.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Now, I mean, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, your T-shirt.
Yes.
Blessed. Yes. Tell me, why is that so important? Because even when I met you, I asked, how do you feel? And you said, I am blessed.
Yes. Yeah, I am indeed blessed, because just the gift of life is a blessing. And not just the gift of life, but being a cancer survivor, it's a blessing to be alive.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your decision to share this story. I know that you are still attached to the Cancer Society.
Yes.
But sharing your story, why did you decide to share your story?
I decided to share my story because I want more women to become empowered, and I want them to be aware of being diagnosed, not only being diagnosed, but being aware of the benefits of early detection of breast cancer, right? I want people to know that it's not a death sentence, but it is a journey that you can survive once you treat it early. There is life after, yeah?
How do you feel now? You're 45, you were diagnosed at 42?
42,
at
yes.
42. How do you feel now, emotionally, mentally, physically? Because you've been through the storm,
yeah.
And now you've emerged.
Yes, I feel stronger. You know, because before getting that diagnosis, it had crushed me, right? And I was not as strong as I am now. And even like finding out about my diagnosis, I went into like a shell. I didn't want people to know. I actually zoned out. I blocked people. I physically went to my phone and started to block contacts because I couldn't deal with hearing this negative diagnosis. And I at that time, I didn't feel to be bombarded by all the negative connotations that goes with a cancer diagnosis.
You were afraid to tell people, but obviously
yeah.
You went through your contact
yeah.
list. And you blocked. Was it everyone on that list?
No,
or
no,
how did
no,
you choose?
No.
How did you choose that?
It wasn't everyone. You know, it was selectively, because at that time I just couldn't deal with it at the time. And I know sometimes I don't know if it's like a Caribbean culture, you know, from the time that you hear someone has cancer, they was like, oh gosh, you are cancer girl. And you know, Tante Jane had cancer and she died. I didn't want to hear that.
Was cancer prevalent in your family? When you heard breast cancer, that you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, is it something that was familiar to you?
No, not breast cancer, but actually my dad had passed away from prostate cancer in the 80s. Yeah, so cancer, knowing about cancer, yes, but not breast cancer.
So did you ever think, because you're aware of cancer,
mm-hmm.
your father passed away,
mm-hmm.
Did you ever think that I may one day be fighting this disease, or I may one day be diagnosed with breast
no.
cancer?
No, never. The thought was never there.
Tell me yeah. a little bit, and I know you have a daughter
yeah.
and you have a husband. At that time, your daughter was 12.
12, yeah.
So breast cancer is not prevalent in your family. You
no.
never even thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
Initially you were doing a self-examination.
Yes, because that was probably late December, just after Christmas or so, I noticed a lump in my left breast, you know, and I examined and I said, this is not feeling right, you know, and then January rolled over and I'm still feeling it there. And well, every year I will normally go to my gynecologist. So I'll do my yearly pap smears and so on. And I went to her in January as the year opened. I said, we're dealing with this one time. And I went to her and I told her, say, doc, I'm here to do my pap smear and so on. However, I would like you to examine this breast. It doesn't feel right, you know? And she did. And she as well said, yeah, it don't feel too right. So she suggested that I do a biopsy, right?
At this point, did it occur to you that I may be diagnosed with cancer?
And I still did not. I refused to think it was cancer, right? And I remember doing the biopsy and waiting on the results. And I shared with a friend of mine that, you know, I did the biopsy and so on. And she asked the question, what if it's cancer? And still it was not my mind because I was like, nah. You know, I still refuse to believe that it could come back positive.
So that waiting period.
That waiting period was terrible. It was terrible. It was a bit of anxiety and uneasiness, you know, that what if? Yeah.
And the what if was answered how? When did you get your diagnosis?
I got my diagnosis in February of 2021.
Tell me about that day. Tell me about that moment.
Yeah. So when I did the biopsy, I received the results via email, right? And when I received the results, I saw it said grade 2 carcinoma. So I was like, carcinoma, what is this? Actually, my husband was at home when I received the results and I shared it with him. And I say, okay, let me Google, what is this? And I see it's a carcinoma, it's a form of cancer. And we both look at each other and like, he's like, don't worry about it. We'll pray about it, you know? And we didn't, we prayed about it, but still the uneasiness of knowing that possibility exists. You know, so my gynecologist, she told me as soon as I received the results to send it to her. And when I send it to her, she called me in, come in, let's have a discussion.
Did you take your husband with you? Because you said at no point did you even consider cancer.
No.
So did you even, so tell me, did he accompany you to the examination? Did you say, I think something is wrong, we're waiting on a test?
Yeah, and he was aware that, and you know, doing all the tests and so on. And I took my mom with me. You know, my mom has always been by my side. She's the one that I will always hold on to. Even when I was pregnant and going to doctor visits and so on, she will accompany me, you know? We have that closeness. So I took her with me to the gynecologist and, you know, she sat me down and she said, you know, I'm sorry to let you know, but it is cancer, you know?
So yeah. Your mother was with you.
Yeah.
Listening to the doctor say, because of course you Googled it with your husband.
Yeah.
You were still not sure.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when the doctor looked at you and said, Amelia, I am sorry, this is cancer.
Yeah. And still at that time, I think I was in shock still, but it didn't hit me then. So when I got the diagnosis from her and she said, it's cancer, okay. And she said, well, okay, these are the steps that you need to take. So there are different doctors that she recommended that, you know, you can go to and start doing follow-ups. You can either go through the public health system or you can go through the private health system. So I opted to go through private. Mm-hmm. And she referred me to some very equipped doctors, and I did. And I went. Again, we did some follow-up tests and so on. And when I went and they did some more tests, my mom was there with me again. And, you know, he sat
me down.
Even
through all that time, did you think that maybe this is a surreal moment that I'm going to come out one day and everyone is going to say there was a misdiagnosis?
Mm-hmm. Somewhere in the back of my mind, yes. You know, but even when the doctor was going through all this, then at that time, when he said yes, when we got back all the results, CT scan and mammograms and all that, he said, yes, it is cancer. And at that time, that was the breaking point for me, you know, and I remember sitting in that office and just crying, you know, and my mom there and, you know, she consoling me and, you know, she's saying, doc, I don't understand. She don't smoke, she don't drink, I hardly eat meat, you know. How come? How?
You got the diagnosis. How did you break the news to your daughter and your husband? She was 12, 13 at that time.
Yes. Well, breaking it to my husband was easier, but breaking it to my daughter was one of the hardest things I had to do. And I didn't know how to tell her. You know, I reached out to a lady and she said, you will know when it's the right time.
So you didn't tell her immediately?
No, I didn't tell her immediately. So there was a night she was having dinner and we were sitting down and she's like, Mommy, why I feel like you're hiding something from me? Something's happening and is something wrong? And you know, I put her to sit down and I told her, I said, well, this is what happening, you know. I found a lump in my breast. She was aware that I did the biopsy and so on. And I told her, I said, well, the doctor said that it is cancer. And she was eating, she just pushed everything away and she just bent her head on the table and she just started to cry, you know. And I just had to console her and reassure her that, you know, it's okay. I'll be fine. I'm not going to die. I'm okay.
You had to be strong for her at that moment. Did you feel as though you would break as well?
Yes. Though? Yes. But I had to try to keep it together for her. Yeah. But it was hard. It was hard.
Did she understand this? You were diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm. Can we talk about the stage and what the doctors were saying about your chances and the diagnosis itself?
Yeah. So after going to the second doctor and so on, they classed it as grade 3, right? Stage 3,
right?
Grade 2, stage 3. And now came these exams and the cost for surgeries and all is thousands of dollars, you know? So when he said, okay, this is your options, we can do surgery, you know, so on. And when he said the cost, you know, I was like, whoa, that's a heavy cost. So I reached out to a lady at Cancer Society and she said, you know, ask him for a referral letter to St. James Women's Hospital. And I did, and he graciously did the letter for me. And I went to the hospital thinking, okay, I'm just going to carry the letter and join the clinic and, you know, we're going through this. And immediately I saw the doctor and he pulled a book and he started to flip and he's like, okay, this is March of 2021 now. He's like, okay, and we're going to schedule you for surgery the next week. I was like, what? I started to cry again because I was like, I wasn't ready for this. Everything just started to happen so quickly.
Did they explain to you why you needed to have surgery
so
quickly?
Yes, he said that, you know, because of this stage, they wanted to treat it quickly for it not to, to progress further. Because after doing the biopsy, I also did a biopsy under my arm because I also was feeling, you know, a discomfort. It had lumps under my arm as well, the lymph nodes. And it showed that the cancer had already traveled to some of the lymph nodes. So they had to move quickly.
How aggressive was the cancer?
It wasn't that aggressive, but they wanted to contain it. Yeah, before it progressed.
Yeah. Well, I know, Amelia, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to start to talk a little bit about your journey and your treatment. Mm. At the age of 42, she was diagnosed. As they say, life starts at 40. And 2 years into that new chapter of her life, she's now battling a disease that many women are still fearful of. Stay with us.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back to It Does Not Define Me, a show where we feature breast cancer warriors, women who have overcome the odds, and they're here to share their story to inspire others to know that breast cancer does not have to be a death sentence. Amelia shared the story that at 42, she was diagnosed with cancer. Now we're at the stage where she is going into surgery. In less than a week after your diagnosis, you were taken into surgery, right?
About 3 weeks, yeah.
So 3 weeks after the diagnosis, mm-hmm. what was the surgery like? Tell me about the preparation, also about your daughter, your husband, and your mother.
Yeah, so everything happened quickly, as I said before. Went to join the clinic and they scheduled me. At that time, we were in the pandemic and I had to do COVID testing and everything. So we did that the same day. And I had to just immediately prep for surgery one time, you know, the doctor, and they went through everything, you know, what to do to prepare for surgery and so on. And my mom immediately, she rallied, packed up her stuff, moving by me, you know, and she was there. She was there from day one, yeah.
Preparing for your surgery, obviously you had to be strong for your daughter because you mentioned that moment.
Yeah.
Going into surgery is always a 50-50.
Yeah.
What did you tell her going into that surgery and how did you feel?
I had to reassure her that I'll be fine. You know, although in the back of my mind, I know things could go anywhere, but I had to reassure her. And on that day, going in for surgery, you know, she had her best friend came over and stayed with her the afternoon, you know, and she really supported her.
Yeah.
Held her tight.
Where was your husband in all of this? You know, men try to really control their emotions and not be outward with these things.
Yes.
Did he sit with you and realize that I could lose my wife at this point?
Yeah. Yeah, he was there, you know, the driver taking me to the hospital and so on, you know, but quiet.
Yeah.
Because I know it's a process to process all this, you know, in your mind that what's really happening. You know, when you think, as you say, in your 40s and, you know, and everything just started to go a different direction.
Did you ever have a conversation with him, Amelia, or did he have a conversation with you, both recognizing the fact that this may go anyway?
You know, strange enough, we didn't have that conversation. We try to stay very positive. You know, we pray a lot, you know, because we believe that God will work this out. So we always kept that positive mind, although we know that things could go either way, but we left it in God's hands and we prayed about it and we just went through it.
Yeah. You know, I come back to your shirt, Blessed, and you seem to talk a lot about your faith during this journey, but was there ever a time, because we're all human, and there are days, even with me, I would not have gone through with you, but I question God's grace in my life. Mm-hmm. Did you ever wonder, because even your mother, when diagnosis came, said you don't drink, you don't smoke, you eat well, you take care of yourself. Did you ever question your faith or God's grace in your life?
Yeah, I remember asking God, why me? You know, and immediately I heard, why not you?
Yeah.
And I remember a night driving home and I was just in tears, crying and asking God, why? And, you know, I'm feeling so weak. Everybody saying, Gail is strong. You'll get through this. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling so weak. I just can't do this. And strange enough, my pastor called me the same time while I was driving home, you know, and he was like, Amelia, you okay? You know, and I was like, Pastor, no, I can't do this, you know? And everybody telling me I'm so strong, but I'm not feeling it, you know? And he said, pull aside. And I was like, no, it's okay, I'm close to home, you know? And, you know, he prayed with me, he encouraged me, you know? But yes, you always, even though your faith in God, you could question, like, why? You know, why is this happening? You know, but God gave me that reassurance that, why not you? You can do this. Yeah.
You can do this. And you said when you got the initial diagnosis, you blocked a lot of people. Mm. Was there a shame?
Yes, Hema. Yes, there was. I think we come from that culture that, you know, that when we hear something and the way how people will speak or look at you, you will feel kind of like shame, like, oh gosh, why is this happening to me and what people will say. So I said, okay, that was my defense mechanism. One of my defense mechanisms, like, okay, I will block them so that people wouldn't know.
So in terms of the surgery and post-surgery, no one knew outside your immediate family?
Just a few people, but Not many.
After the surgery, tell me about the prep for the surgery, the surgery, and post-surgery.
So, this was early March. I had to take time off from work, you know, so I called my supervisor and I told him, you know, I have to take some immediate leave. I have some things going on medically and I need to be away from work.
So you didn't say I...
No.
Okay.
No. Because I wanted that privacy. I didn't want, you know, at that time. And he graciously like, okay, no problem, whatever it is, you know, be here for you and so on. I called my sister. I have a sister living abroad, you know. And I called her and I told her what's happening, you know. And I know it was tough on them because, you know, it was the pandemic. And I know if it wasn't the pandemic, she would have been home, you know. And I just had to rally my immediate family, my brother, my sisters, and they, and let them know, okay, this is what's happening and so on. And again, speak with my daughter, my husband, you know, and my mom, and okay, how are we going to navigate, you know, and they, like, how after surgery, like what you're going to eat and all these things. And
how big an adjustment was it after surgery?
It was quite an adjustment. It was a big adjustment because coming out from surgery, you know, the pain and so on. Well, I told God from early, hear what? I'm not going to die, right? I'm not ready to die. Let's say it real as is. I told God, I am not ready to die. Right? So you have to take me through this. Right? And I said, God, I don't want to be sick. I don't want to look like what people think cancer is, what you see on TV, you know, the yes, you will lose your hair and so on, but you know, you're looking frail and you can hardly move, the nausea and the vomiting. And I told God, I don't want that. I don't want that. And Hema, you know, even coming from surgery, yes, I was in a little pain, but it wasn't anything that I couldn't handle. It was really nice and smooth. Just as what I asked God for is just what I got.
When you came out of surgery, who was the first person you saw? What is the first thing your daughter said to you and your husband said to you?
They were just glad. She just, you know, held me, embraced me. You know, my mom was there, my best friend actually. The morning of surgery, she was the first person. She left home early, early the morning, and she came, and she encouraged me. She prayed with me. You know, she's always there for me. You know, and after surgery, my mom and they came up. My mom, my husband, and they, you know, and it was so nice just to see everybody just there rallying with you, cheering you on. Yes, you will come through.
You know, sickness is something that tests not just your faith, but relationships as well.
Yeah.
It will test, we are all human. It tests a husband and wife.
Yeah.
It will test your children because it's emotional on everyone.
Yeah.
How did it affect your family life?
It did. In terms of that physical connection, that emotional connection, it could test you because it's like, sometimes you look at yourself and you could feel less than a woman when you look, okay, your hair gone, you had a mastectomy, you're physically not looking, you're not feeling the same. So it's hard now to reach out to your partner to feel that kind of love, although he's reassuring me, I love you.
Yeah.
You understand? I couldn't accept it.
I know the intimacy in a lot of relationships because as a woman, you're accepting this new incarnation of you.
Yeah.
How, as a couple, how did you deal with the intimacy?
Well, as I said, he is the one who had to keep reassuring me that no matter what, I am here for you. I love you. You understand? Just the way how you are. And Hema, it took me a while. It took me a while to actually accept it.
A lot of people, what is a while? And a lot of people talk about their physical intimacy is gone. And that while can be a month. Mm-hmm. It can be years.
Yeah.
What was your while like?
Months, because coming out from surgery, right? Then you have to start with the chemo and so on. So all these medication and so on, it affects your whole entire physical being. You don't feel the same. You will feel tired. You know, you will feel, you just don't feel the same anymore.
Were you prepared for that? Did anyone say to you that you just would not feel like yourself and the way it would feel?
Yes, some of them. I had actually two persons I know went through it. And but again, it's a personal journey. Although people could tell you and you could try to prepare, it's only when you're in it, then you will understand how the feelings are, because everyone is different.
You know, you talk a lot about as a woman and accepting yourself now with your hair loss. Mm. I think a lot of women, that still is one of the, because we're just put in a culture where hair and beauty are just associated. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that radiation and that chemotherapy journey for you, because after the surgery, that's one battle, but the war continues.
Yeah. So with the chemo, I started with chemo in April of 2021. And it was 8 rounds of chemo, right? And that chemo lasted from April all the way down to December. And I didn't think that it would have been so long, because, you know, it's 8 rounds, and each rounds is once every 3 weeks, right? So I had the first one, I was fine. By the time I went for the second round of chemo, the white blood cells and so on started to drop. So they had to, every time you, before you go for chemo, they have to test. You have to take your blood, you have to test to make sure that everything is okay. So the second rounds now, it got postponed to the other week because I had to build back up. So that's what kind of pushed back my the session so long, you know, and I started to get tired because I was like, oh my gosh, I just want to get this over with. You know, so sometimes when you go, you think, yes, you're getting chemo today. And then when it reaches, like, no, your body not strong enough. You have to wait another week or two. I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, and I actually, I had a calendar and I actually put every week which, and a cousin of mine said, Gail, just stop counting. You just go. Whenever you get through, you know?
I know we have to take a break, but I do want to ask, that moment when you started to lose your hair, what were you feeling like when you, because no one experiences but the patient themselves, when your hair simply just starts falling, what was that like for you?
It felt a bit devastating, you know, because I was just, they are just like, I was like, wait, my hair? Because, yes, they would prepare you and tell you, like, okay, after the second session, most times people might lose their hair, you know, and it really did happen, like, after the second rounds of chemo. I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, and immediately I was like, okay, time to cover up this head, because I just can't deal with, you know, looking at myself, you know, and a few women reached out and, like, and they started to share pictures with me of them when they went through it, and it's like, it's fine. You know, it's quite okay. You'll be fine. Yeah?
You will be fine.
Yeah.
Emily, we have to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the journey of resilience and one of acceptance. Mm.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back to It Does Not Define Me, a show featuring breast cancer warriors. And we're continuing our conversation with Emilio. So Emilio, the surgery is finished. You've started your chemotherapy. You've started your radiation. This journey is continuing. But you said at the beginning that you felt a sense of shame. You did not want to tell people your story. But physically, you are changing.
Yeah.
When did you become strong enough to simply say, this is a journey I am on, and it's okay if people know?
I only found that strength this year, Hema, actually.
As a survivor?
Yeah.
As a cancer-free
as
survivor?
As a cancer. And not only as a cancer-free survivor, but because of the network of the Trinidad and Tobago Cancer Society, we had sessions during the pandemic, and we had sessions on mental health, nutrition, yoga, all these sessions. So that really helped me a lot. And I remember when I had to return to work, the anxiety was to the roof.
Obviously, physically, you're changing. Yeah. So what did you say to people?
Yeah. You know, and actually, people were actually kind when I returned to work, you know.
Did they know?
They didn't bombard. I guess a few did, but no one never bombarded me to say, you know. And I reached out to the Cancer Society, and I was telling one of the persons there that, you know, how I feel. And they said that, you know, it's okay. Again, they people will reassure you. They have their entire team, doctors, psychologists, everybody. So it was easy to return to work, although I felt that sense of anxiety, like, oh gosh, what people will say, you know, how they'll look at you. It wasn't like that.
You also documented your journey. You shared pictures with us here at the production team, with your hair loss, with your husband. Mm. Why did you feel the need to do that? What was it like also even seeing yourself like that?
I started to accept. I started to accept, again, the networking with other women. I realized that you are not alone on this journey, that there are also other women who are going through, and we need each other. And we need to empower women as well to let them know that even if you receive a negative diagnosis, whatever it may be, that you can survive. It does not define you. So that has helped me a lot. Trinidad and Tobago Cancer Society, that network of women, very powerful network.
What role did that network play in you accepting it and also protecting your relationship with your daughter? If that support network was not there, what do you think your story would be like?
Well, because I do have a good network with my family, yes, it would have been, but I don't know if it would have been as strong as, because of the knowledge that they have at the Cancer Society, that they could point you to different resources and so on. Yeah.
I want to talk about, you started a business, you started baking during your recovery. How did that happen?
Well, my husband realized that, you know, I was looking depressed, and I would just be sitting around, you know, because you have nothing to do, right? And he was like, you know, you need to channel that energy differently. You know, find something that you like to do, you know. And I like to sew. Well, not no big thing, but, you know, I will do my little curtains and so on. Pull out the sewing machine, and I was like, it just wasn't happening. And then I just took my tablet a day and lying down on the bed and was just looking at some videos, baking videos, and I was like, this is interesting, because my sister, she's a baker, you know? And we started to share, you know, I would say, hey, look at this video, and started to share things with her to encourage her, you know? And I was like, but I think I could do this. Let me see if I can make a little cake. And I started to do that, make cake, and, you know, share it with my family. And they was like, but this thing tasting good, Kaylee. You know, and it's like, okay, I think I'm onto something, you know. So anybody birthday or so coming up, I will use that opportunity. And
was it a distraction?
Yes, it was a really good distraction. It really helped.
You spoke about the journey with the chemo and the radiation, and you said it seemed like forever. It was almost 8 months, right?
Yes, from April to December.
After the last round, and they did the test, when were you declared cancer-free?
Actually, January, yes, when I saw my oncologist, yes, that is when they said it's in remission free, and you do the radiation. I went to radiation from March till April 2022. I finished actually the 6th of April, and the day after was my birthday. And my friend and her mom and my daughter, and they took me for breakfast at the Hyatt. And oh my gosh, Hema, it was awesome. And the hostess, you know, when they told her that I a cancer survivor, just finished radiation and so on, The son, it was a grand celebration. Cake like that. You know,
everyone they, was celebrating.
But listen, we were singing very loud in the Hyatt. And you know, they were so gracious. And they hired the staff. Oh my gosh, they're excellent.
Can you remember that day when they said it to you, that you were cancer-free?
Yeah, yeah. It was the most relieving feeling ever.
You know, Millie, a lot of times when you are declared cancer-free, there is always a possibility in life. Mm. How have you, are you doing anything differently? You know, some people say don't prepare for the worst, always live. And you seem to be very always optimistic.
Yeah. So what I started to do, actually, from day one, you know, I changed up how I eat. And, you know, I was encouraged to do a lot of juicing, a lot of smoothies, you know, less oily foods and all that. So, you know, you have to be mindful that we need to take care of this body. You know, and I started to do that.
You know, a lot of people who are going to know you would say, but you told us earlier you would eat healthy before.
Yeah.
So you just decided to do all vegan now?
No, not vegan, no. But to me, when I think I was eating healthy, it wasn't like what I'm doing now. So like every day, I would prepare a smoothie.
Is there oil in your house?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but everything in moderation, you know, everything in moderation. I love doubles. Like when I get good news, I'll go buy the doubles vendor. I'll buy some doubles. You know, yeah. So everything in moderation. But now I change up how I do things. So like, for instance, although I use oil, I will use like avocado oils and so, you know. So it's a more purpose, a more intent, you know, paying attention at what you do. Yeah.
Now, you obviously, now that cancer has found its way into your family, particularly that we know the stats, one in every 9 women in Trinidad and Tobago will be diagnosed or is at a risk of being diagnosed with cancer. Do you look at your daughter every day and what do you tell her? How? Because obviously it is a concern of yours.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I always, as you say, I will always live optimist. I would tell her, you know, I'm sure I'm leading by example. So she would see that I am making wiser choices by the way that I eat. You know, I even encourage her, like if something is wrong, it's fine to go to the doctor because, you know, sometimes we have this thing, we don't like to go to the doctor. We don't know what's going on. We don't want to know what's going on. So I would encourage her, you know, if something is wrong, it's quite okay to go to the doctor to see if anything is wrong. Even like for her going to the dentist, that's a big thing, you know, so.
But as a teenager, I'm sure during your journey, I mean, everyone Googles now, particularly young people.
Yeah.
Was she constantly Googling information and coming to say, they said this is the risk, this is the possibility?
I guess because, like when I, no, and as you said that, I now remember something. When I was going in for surgery, I still didn't tell her exactly it is cancer. Right? I told her, I said, I have to go for surgery. You know, I have a situation dealing with and so on. So after surgery now, and I had to start chemo, I told her, well, you know, I have to do chemo. She's like, Mommy, you have cancer? So I was like, kill is nothing big. It's just a little thing, you know, just to kind of give her that reassurance. And that's why I said to myself, I don't want to be sick, you know, for her to be like overly worried, you know, and she was so supportive, Emma. Every time, like when I come home from chemo, she would put the pillows on the bed and she was like, Mommy, come lie down, lie down.
Do you regret not telling her more?
No. No, because I realized at that time, you have to know how much information to give them. Because she had just entered secondary school. So at the end of the first term, no, at the end of the second term, yeah, her grades started to decline because of what was going on with me. So when I had to reassure her, okay, and then I saw that it changed and she started to pick back up and, you know, and she was more positive. And so again, I had to lead. I had to show her I'll be fine. You know, although some days, you know, but I had to show her the resilience.
Do you, as now that she's developing, because she's now a teenager,
yeah,
right? Do you impressed the importance on to her about getting tested, doing self-examinations, your pap smears, all of these things?
Mm-hmm. Well, not all, but the self-examinations, yes. And my oncologist as well, she encouraged me to get vaccinated with the HPV. Yeah. So, because, you know, not being informed properly about these things, you know, you can go on here, say, you know, people say, oh, no, don't take that vaccine thing. But because of my diagnosis and when the doctor and my oncologist explained, you know, risk factors and what steps you should take or so, then I realized, okay, you have to learn to make informed, you have to get informed decision, you have to make informed decision choices and so on, so that the next generation will be better. Yeah.
Looking at the next generation, you said it's only this year you became comfortable saying I'm a survivor.
Yeah.
What exactly happened that you said, I'm going to now say this story out loud?
I think because of being surrounded by so many women, and I'm realizing that my voice could be used to help someone else. You know, instead of hiding, I realized that I can help someone. I could help someone through a journey. I could help someone overcome. I could help someone even if they feel something. And it don't have to be cancer. Mm-hmm. It could be anything that you can use your voice to actually help someone else. So I started to feel a little more confident in myself to, you know, to help other women.
Amina, what would you say to women who are starting this journey now? What would you say to them, and what would you say to their families?
I would say to them my favorite scripture verse, Proverbs 18:21, that a knife is in the power of the tongue. So I always encourage people to speak positive. Even through my journey, I never said I have cancer. I will say I was diagnosed with cancer and I am going through a journey and I'm going for treatment, but I will never say I have. Mm-hmm. You know, and I will also encourage patients when I meet them at the clinic, like when I go for treatment and so on, I will always say, don't speak negative. Always, you know, because your mind is a very powerful tool. You know, and I would encourage them to speak positive. And even though we're not going to be naive what we're facing, but, you know, always have that positive outlook that things will get better. You know, because let's face the reality, sometimes people do die. Sometimes they do. But even though if that's the end result through the journey, you always still remain positive. So this is why I choose now to speak up, because I have met other women who recently got diagnosed and I was actually able to help someone navigate through their journey. She just started actually her chemo sessions and, you know, I will support her. I'll be there, give her a call, check in on her, you know, and tell her, well, okay, this may happen, because everybody is different. Yeah. So what I may have experienced at a certain time, you could look out for signs, but that don't have to be you, you know, because chemo, this journey is a mental battle first before a physical, because that mind, you need to keep this mind focused. Yeah.
Well, Amelia, you really have given all of us, you know, you've given us faith, mm-hmm. but also I think you've proven to us that once you think it's going to happen in your favor, there's a good chance that it is going to happen in your favor. So definitely you are a warrior, and we thank you for sharing your story on this series that It Does Not Define Me, Breast Cancer Warriors. Thank you again for tuning in. Mm-hmm.